90s on Monday. So it is a beautiful summer here in the Catskill area. Stay tuned. Now and Then is coming right up. Support comes from listeners and from the River Reporter newspaper in Narrowsburg, New York, riverreporter.com. Stay tuned. I've got a special edition of Now and Then coming up. Back in the spring and summer of 2013, the museum at Bethel Woods did a special exhibition of some photographs featuring the photography of the work of the artist Baron Wolman. Now, Baron Wolman was the actual official photographer for Rolling Stone magazine. And when Woodstock happened 46 years ago, right about this time, actually August 15th, you know, they sent Baron Wolman on assignment. Rolling Stone sent him in on assignment to cover the Woodstock Festival. Now, he actually released his photographs, and for a long time, they were the only photographs that had ever really been officially taken of the festival. The New York Times did an article, but you know what? They didn't even have a reporter there. It was up to the Rolling Stone and Baron Wolman to document this incredible event. I was fortunate to actually have a wonderful conversation with Baron Wolman back in 2013 in August. And so today, a special edition of Now and Then, we'll be listening to the conversation with the Rolling Stone photographer and featuring his Woodstock photographs with Baron Wolman. Stay tuned. I'm Kathy Geary. Welcome to Now and Then. Today's program features a conversation with a photojournalist, Baron Wolman. Baron Wolman. Baron Wolman had has an exciting life as a photographer. He was the very first staff photographer for Rolling Stone in 1967 when they published their very first issue. He was the man that got sent out on assignment. And there's a special exhibition of his photography. The exhibition is called On Assignment, Woodstock. The photographs by Rolling Stone photographer Baron Wolman. 1967, he's living in San Francisco with his wife, a ballet dancer. They're living in Haight-Ashbury. And he says, quote, "I was earning a living as a photojournalist, working for anybody who would pay me to take pictures, magazines, newspapers, ad agencies, universities, anyone. And then Rolling Stone came into my life." The Woodstock Music Fair was photographed by lots of professional photographers and photojournalists, but only Baron Wolman's images of the festival were published and told the story in Rolling Stone magazine immediately following the event. And it's interesting because his photographs focus on the people that are gathering and the behind-the-scenes actions. That summer, 1969, he's already been with Rolling Stone for a couple of years, and he's already done a lot of concert photography, and he's working on a book called Festivals, and he's traveling around the United States with another photographer, a friend of his named Jim Marshall. And they go to the Newport Folk Festival in July of 1969, making photographs for the book Festivals. And then he gets sent on an assignment to the Woodstock Festival, and he had no idea what he was in for. The most interesting thing I found out when I heard about your exhibition is that as a photojournalist, you'd already been working with a lot of musicians and doing a lot of rock and roll photography, but you took pictures of the people who gathered at this festival. And when I heard that the content of the photographs in the exhibition that's coming up is of the audience and of the gathering, that said so much to me about who you were as a photographer. So I'm curious, you're coming in on car, you find a back way there, you see this outstanding construction, and you get an idea that this might be a slightly bigger festival than what you've already been working on. When did you start to decide to take pictures? When did you pull your camera out?
I parked my car and pulled my camera out because I was not able to get right up next to, you know, there was nobody to park right next to the venue. I still had to walk, but I didn't have to walk quite that far, and I threw my camera bag on my shoulder, took out the cameras, put the lenses on, and started walking, and I saw the people, also people walking, and the people sitting there watching them walk, and I saw the people sitting there the locals watching mm-hmm. them drive, mm-hmm. and looking at them. I mean, sometimes I think that the locals looked at this onslaught of counterculture people, fundamentally, right?
Very much.
With fear, and some of them with love, and some of them with compassion. And I think the ones that with compassion, they gave them water, they gave them food. I saw a couple of so-called hippies, right, trying mm-hmm. to milk a cow because they wanted something to drink, you know? I mean, the stuff I saw, the human stuff I saw, just was unbelievable. And it is true. I had photographed most of these bands, so it's very exciting to photograph rock and roll and photograph rock and roll bands, no question about it.
Wow.
But this scene was well beyond the concept of a rock and roll show. It was a gathering of tribes, a gathering of friends, a gathering of people of like-minded people who love music and also who seem to believe in the notion of peace, love, and music together, you know?
And that is where you put your attention. That's what captured your imagination.
Absolutely. I got on stage, and I took this picture I had the widest angle lens that I brought with me, which is not as wide as they make these days, and I could not include the entire crowd in that wide-angle picture. That's how big it was. And I just was stunned by that fact, you know? And everything that went along with it, you know, how are these people going to survive 3 days of sitting in one place? How are they going to get food? How are they going to go to the bathroom? How are they, you know, blah, 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 all this stuff. And then when I started walking around the grounds, you know, many people pretty much sat still in the center, listened to the music the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also this constant motion, movement of people on the periphery of the crowd. It was very fluid, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that was so fascinating. And I'll tell you something else that was really fascinating, is that I looked at those pictures as we were printing them before we sent them over there. You know, there were no sneakers. Nobody wore sneakers in those days. There was no Adidas. There was no Nike. There was no nothing.
There was no logos on the
clothes. There were no branded T-shirts.
No logos.
You didn't see one branded T-shirt in that crowd.
It was a non-commercial event. It wasn't intended to be.
Let's welcome Mr. Richie Haven.
Thank you. guitar mic.
Happened, there wasn't a lot of media coverage. I know the New York Times did some, they reported on the problems before the festival happened, and then afterwards they did a little bit of retrospective. But it wasn't until September 20th that Rolling Stone published their edition with your photographs of the gathering.
Right.
And that was about a month after the festival was finished. What happened during that month? Did you go back to the offices? Did you, you developed all your own photographs?
Yeah, well, I developed, you know, in those days it was film. I had to process the film. I gave them the contact sheets. They had a couple of writers there, and they put together that, not only the issue of Rolling Stone, they put in a, they put together a special issue too, as you know, special magazine about the event. And I, and they told the true story. You know, the New York Times was saying, oh, there's all this trouble going on, and there's drugs, and people are dying, and there's, you know, that was a very scary article that the Times wrote, and they didn't even have anybody on site. So wait a minute, what kind of writing is that? And that's, you know, that's the New York Times, come on. So Rolling Stone, as is often the case, still told the truth and told the real story and told the people what actually happened.
When Baron Wolman arrived at the Woodstock Festival on Friday and started taking his photographs, Ritchie Havens took the stage and opens the concert with that song, Freedom. Ritchie Havens played one of the longest sets during the entire festival. It was 5:07 in the evening when Ritchie Havens took the stage, and he played for almost 2 hours. The logistics were insane. It was really hard to get all the bands in. But that evening was a really kind of a folk-oriented Woodstock concert. Later that night, Tim Hardin played, Ravi Shankar, Melanie, do you remember Melanie? Arlo Guthrie takes the stage right around midnight, and Joan Baez finishes that evening's performance at 1 o'clock in the morning. She sings for an hour. She's 6 months pregnant at the time. The next day is Saturday, and the concert starts up again at noon. And that afternoon, Baron Wolman, let's face it, he's on assignment from Rolling Stone. He has unlimited access. And that afternoon, Baron Wolman gets up onto the stage and starts to take photographs. Country Joe McDonald's at 1 o'clock, and Santana takes the stage at 2 o'clock, and Baron captures some photographs of Carlos Santana. When Santana leaves the stage, an interesting change, John Sebastian takes the stage at 3:30, and Baron Wolman is still up there on stage and takes some photographs of John Sebastian. Let's listen to what it sounded like that afternoon at Woodstock, with the 200,000 people in attendance, and Carlos Santana takes the stage at 2 o'clock with Soul Sacrifice. Carlos Santana, live at Woodstock.
had a dream last night. What a lovely dream it was. I dreamed we all were all right, happy in a land of Oz. Why did everybody laugh when I told them my dream? I guess they all were so far from that kind of scene, feeling mean. I heard a song last night. What a lovely song it was. I thought I'd hum it all night. Unforgettable because all of the players were playing together, and all of the heavies were light as a feather. All I'll remember is a feeling tomorrow. But as I recall, the rest will just follow. I had a dream last night. What a lovely dream it was. I dreamed we all were all right, happy in a land of Oz. What a lovely dream it was. What a lovely dream it was.
John Sebastian, live from the stage at Woodstock, August 1969. What an amazing energy to have stood there after Santana, and to have that extremes of that electric whirlwind of music and then that heartfelt acoustic song. And there on the stage is Baron Wolman taking photographs. That afternoon turns into night, and they don't stop playing. That concert did not stop until 9 o'clock in the morning on that Saturday. The Grateful Dead take the stage like at 10:30 at night. Janis Joplin and the Cosmic Blues Band come on the stage at Woodstock at 2 a.m. in the morning. We're going to hear a little bit of that performance later in the program. And then the Jefferson Airplane finally take the stage at 8 a.m. in the morning. Woodstock. What an amazing experience. My program today features a conversation with the photojournalist Baron Wolman. If you are also interested in some of the other photographs that he took during his years as the chief staff photographer at Rolling Stone magazine, you might be interested in a book that he just published in 2011, Every Picture Tells a Story. You've published a book, Every Picture Tells a Story, The Rolling Stone Years, and yep. You have captured a photograph of Jimi Hendrix with his head back and his mouth is slightly open, and you can just see the music flowing around his head. What an amazing photograph you took of him.
Thank you. No, I mean, the exhilaration of a musician on stage is in that photograph. It must be, if you are a musician, and you have a crowd, and I mean almost any crowd of people who are appreciating your music, it must be such an exhilarating experience to relate to the crowd that way, you know? Mm. And then to demonstrate it by how, listen, well, let me finish that sentence, to demonstrate it by how you actually present yourself on stage. Now, Jimi Hendrix, you could not take a bad picture of Jimi Hendrix. Hmm. Number one, his performance was extraordinarily photogenic from the point of view of photographer. I mean, you've seen the pictures of him down on his knees burning his guitar. You've seen the pictures of, you've seen my pictures of him. You've seen the pictures of him playing with his feet. You've seen the pictures of him playing behind him. I mean, this guy not only was an incredible musician, but he was an incredible entertainer. And he was a delight to photograph, even when he was, you know, at rest in his room when I photographed him the first time. He dressed so wonderfully. It was like every moment was a photo op.
When I haven't spoken to very many photographers. I usually speak with musicians. And I was thinking about, you know, what did I want to ask you about? And some of the idea that I have is when I look at your picture of Jimi Hendrix and I see that photograph you've taken, I'm thinking about Jimi Hendrix and I see that photograph and I look at another photograph and I look at all of the images. And after a while, I feel like I see the photographer behind the images. In a way that when you read a book, for instance, and you read a story and you see all the characters, eventually you get a sense of who that author is behind those photographs.
Yeah.
And I have a sense of you as a person from seeing the photographs that you've taken. And so as an artist, your art form has gone through incredible changes. Digital photography has replaced old film analog photography. And when you were working, especially in your Rolling Stone years, and you're in that incredible environment and you're excited and you're inspired, you respect these musicians, but you can only take a limited number of photos. You can't take 600 digital photos and just click, 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 click. You have
Correct.
To decide when to take that photograph.
That's true.
There are two techniques.
There's one technique and one backstory I have to tell you that explains how the character of my photographs. First of all, I cannot imagine a world without music. And I am in love with musicians, with people who make music, because music is for me such, it's almost like the, it provides the color of life. Without music, life would be black and white. But with music, it becomes colorful and meaningful. And so I have great affection for musicians of all kinds, anybody that can make music. And that affection and that respect for them the underlying emotion that I felt when I was photographing them. I wanted to give to them in photography what they were giving to me in music. So you will see some intimate moments because I was trying to get from them intimate moments, and they would understand, I believe, in general. Now, this is just in the portraits, right? Mm-hmm. They would understand how I felt about them and in return relax and give me something of themselves, and that's what you saw in the photographs. Now, the concert photography, this is what I learned, is that if I watched a musician perform and I saw something that I wanted to photograph, I missed that moment, that's a great moment, I learned that each song had repeating moments, choruses, or, you know, that every important piece of the music and therefore every important gesture of the musician would repeat itself. So once I saw what I liked and what I wanted to photograph, you know, I had my camera ready so that the next time it came around, I was going to get it. And that's what what happened with that great, the cover photo of Jimmy. I saw that, and when it reappeared, you know, I was ready to take it. Now, here's the thing. You got to anticipate that moment.
The mannerisms
You almost click the shutter before it happens, because if
it's gone,
you see it in the viewfinder, you've missed the photo.
It's gone.
You know what
I
mean?
You see, I hear what you're saying. It's like when a conductor, for instance, has this in front of an orchestra and he gives a downbeat, he's a half second ahead of them. He's always slightly ahead of the music as he conducts. And
exactly.
You're going to capture that image. Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, you got to be a half second in front of that moment. And I always tell people, they say, "Hey, did you like the concert?" And I say, "Hey, I didn't hear the concert. I saw the concert. I was looking at things that were happening at the concert. I didn't have time to listen to it." You know,
it's a very collaborative thing that you're describing that you do with these artists.
Yeah,
very collaborative.
Freedom, that's what I need. Freedom to though, ma'am. Well, I don't need it now. I'm just trying to slap it out of her hand.
Jimi Hendrix, Freedom, that's from The Cry of Love in 1969. Right before that, we heard One Rainy Wish from Axis Bold as Love, Jimi Hendrix back in 1968. So Baron Wolman published a book of his photography, Every Picture Tells a Story, and he's got some really fascinating stories in the book. There's one he tells about he needed some color photographs of Janis Joplin for a magazine story, and he didn't have any. All he had was black and white, so he calls her up and asks her, you know, are you going to be performing anytime soon? But she had nothing scheduled, so he invites her over to his photography studio to capture some color photographs, and she brings along a tape recorder and a microphone, and she starts to lip sync while he's taking photographs, but she ends up singing out Full Tilt, and for a whole hour Janis Joplin sings a live performance for Baron Wolman for a whole hour. He calls it the concert for one. And then he has some beautiful photographs of Janis Joplin. Let's hear Janis Joplin's performance from the Woodstock Festival. This is Summertime by Gershwin. Janis Joplin.
Oh, says, "Mommy, good looking for you." I said, "She's looking pretty fine to me right now. Don't you know she is?" Oh, oh, oh. Hush, baby, 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 baby. Don't you want your pride? Oh, honey, you better not do it. So they're going to kick in the face no matter what you do, and I'll take it from me.
I really enjoyed looking at your website, baronwolman.com, and there was something that you said on your website when you were talking about leaving Rolling Stone, and what you said is, and this is a quote from you, is, quote, "I'm more of a derivatively creative photographer. That is, I photograph what I see, and I do that pretty well. I seldom create scenes from scratch or come up with extraordinarily unique photographic ideas." So that's a very, very deep and interesting statement. It's like a photojournalist. A photojournalist capturing what is actually happening, not coming up with an image for the sake of the glamour of the image itself, but you want to capture what's happening. And I look at the career that you've done. It's amazing the variety of things that you've photographed. What's next? What's next, Baron?
I seek out things that I find interesting. I figure, well, I don't really do it for other people. I do it to explore life myself, to explore the world around me myself, to explore people. You know,
But what shows what I think is when I see your photographs that we're seeing more than just the images. There, you capture the unseen parts. You capture something of the energy that's going on. And that's because I think of your involvement at the time.
Thank you. I mean, you're actually right about that.
I'm curious, when someone comes up to you to talk to you about a photograph they've seen, what do you want them to say? If someone could give you the ultimate compliment, like it would really, like, you know, make you feel really full, what is it you want to hear?
I've already heard it from you. What you said about the photographs is exactly what I want people to feel.
Thank you, Baron. Thank you. It's really...
No, I'm not kidding, Kathy. I mean, that... And what I really enjoy is how people stand in front of the photographs and begin to reminisce about their own lives and how those photographs remind them of moments, important moments in their own lives. That, to me, is very fulfilling, because a photograph can take you back in time like that,
completely.
To a moment that's really important. A lot of times, this particular show doesn't have a lot of the pictures of the performers themselves, but on my other exhibits, when I show other pictures that you see on the website of the performers themselves, people will come up and they'll stand in front of a picture of Janis Joplin and just stare at it. And then if I happen to be there, they say, "You know, I remember seeing her at such and such a concert. And you know what else? I met this," hypothetically it's a woman, "you know what else? I met this guy at that concert and we eventually got married."
Oh, man.
You know, you hear this time and time again about how a given performer at a given concert has made a sea change difference in their lives. So, you know, I'm just so privileged and so blessed to, number one, have been able to be there and take the pictures, but number two, to have been able to make pictures that have that effect upon people, you know?
That's wonderful to hear you say something like that. Really, really great. If you're interested in seeing more of the photography of Baron Wolman, you can visit his website online, baronwolman.com. It's incredible. He has taken photographs. You're going to know every one of these people. Jerry Garcia, Jimi Hendrix, Pete Townsend and The Who. He documented the recording of Tommy. He was there with the Rolling Stones and Mick Jagger, you know, Janis Joplin. He's taken a photograph of Frank Zappa sitting on top of a tractor. Johnny Cash, Miles Davis, Bob Dylan, B.B. King, Led Zeppelin, Jim Morrison, Donovan, Joni Mitchell. He's sitting there across from her at the kitchen table. Jefferson Airplane, John Sebastian. It's an amazing career that this man has had as a photographer. Let's finish up and listen to a little bit more of my conversation with Baron Wolman. The idea of being sent on assignment. You know, a lot of artists, they don't have that kind of outside structure imposed on them. If you're a musician or a painter, you know, you pretty much follow your own little bliss. But you as a photographer had to have been shaped by being sent on assignment. As a young man, what we want from you is to capture what happened and bring it back to us. When you started as a young person, as a photographer, and as you've gone through all these experiences, you've got this arc, have you reached what you wanted when you started? Has that changed for you along the way?
That's a good question. I think I have. I mean, I think that what I was curious about, I have photographed.
Yeah.
What I was curious about, I have experienced.
Yeah.
Now the great sadness for me is the understanding of the human predicament. I mean, I'm very clear about my feeling about our species. I believe that we are, in our DNA, we are programmed to self-destruct as a species.
Mm.
And for these three reasons. First of all, we make babies endlessly without any thought of what it means to have a rapidly increasing population on the planet with a finite amount of resources. Then we create these amazing machines of destruction, and we go around killing one another after that. And then the third thing that happens is that we're fouling our own nest, namely our environment.
Mm.
And from those three things, I cannot see how we will survive ourselves. And having seen all this stuff and photographed everything else, that's the conclusion I've come to, and that's the great sadness that I feel all the time, every time I look at the news, every time I hear stories, every time I look at tragedies going on. I mean, that's something that I cannot reckon. I have no way of getting my head around it other than to say that, you know, this must be the plan, that we are designed to self-destruct, you know.
And there's a very incredible community here in this area. I hope that when you come to the museum, that you get to get a sense of the energy that is in this community here, because it's a really special place. You've donated 100 images to the museum at Bethel Woods, and I hope that your legacy and that your photographs gives you a sense of accomplishment and satisfaction, that you've shown what you've shown. And there's a certain sadness and a certain foreboding I'm getting, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know if we can ever reconcile that as an artist, as a photographer, a musician, or whatever. You have captured, you know, what is happening. And it's an amazing contribution. You've been so generous with your time and your thoughts. Thank you so much, Baron. I would look forward to meeting you then.
Yeah, me too, you. I'm looking forward to being up there. It's going to be a great weekend.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much for the conversation. It's been really great.
Likewise. I'm Kathy Geary. You've been listening to Now and Then, the conversation with a photojournalist, Baron Wallman. I hope you enjoyed the program today. Catch the exhibition opening today at Bethel Woods. Thank you so much for listening. You just heard a pre-recorded program, a special edition of Now and Then, the interview with the Woodstock photographer Baron Wallman. That was recorded in August of 2013. I hope you enjoyed the program. Support comes from the community and from the River Reporter newspaper in Narrowsburg, New York, riverreporter.com. This is 90.5 FM. This is WJFF, Jeffersonville, New York, and W233AH, Monticello, New York. We're hydro-powered, 25 years of non-commercial radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. We have a beautiful forecast going on. We've got a really sunny day going up into the upper 80s. It's going to cool off tonight. We'll have a few clouds. It's going to go down to the mid-60s. Tomorrow looks like another sunny and hot day going into the lower 90s tomorrow. A few clouds tomorrow night, cooling off again down into the upper 60s. And on Monday, the sunshine continues, another hot day. We'll be slightly humid on Monday going into the lower 90s. You're tuned to 90.5 FM. This is Radio Catskill. Right before this special Woodstock photographer program on Now and Then, at 2 p.m., we also heard a Back to the Garden. It was a Woodstock Remembered special. I hope you've enjoyed our special programming today, celebrating the 46th anniversary of the Woodstock gathering. Normally we have Hillbilly Heaven broadcasting at 2 o'clock, and today we had that Back to the Garden Woodstock special. So we are going to go ahead and broadcast Hillbilly Heaven now, and we hope you enjoy this wonderful program with Ron Penska. This is a locally produced program right here in our listening